4, 3, 2, 1, what? Technorama episode 400 for March 26th, 2014. No snappy title? No, you didn't.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember, it's now called No Snappy Title.
Technorama. On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
Fail.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Ugh, I just found out my wife is seeing some guy named Bruce Banner. Where is he so I can give him a piece of my mind?
Over there, in the media corner.
Punch him right in the nose!
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Wait, I thought you said that'll leave a mark. Yes, it will!
That it will, yep.
Do we know the timing of that little gap, or do we know the timing of that little gap? After 400 shows! Actually, that's that didn't come in until like 2-something, but... Welcome to
Tech episodes, and we'll have everything down pat.
Yeah, right. By that time, when we get this right, it's time to quit. Welcome to Technorama for March 26, 2014. This is the show that takes a light, and I emphasize lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you are a returning listener, which I suspect both of you are, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me, as always, is the immutable, because I hit the mute button, and he just unmutes it. It's Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm immutable. I'm doing good, man. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to make another 400.
That'll only take us 25 years.
I know.
We're sort of on this asymptotically approaching zero, but we're not quite dead yet.
Yeah, I'm celebrating.
Well, it's very nice of you, because you know what March 26th also is, now that I have 400 shows to this thing. We'll get to that. I guess we'll get to that in the birthday
thing. Not sure what that is.
On this day in history. Yeah. It's Leonard Nimoy's birthday, of course. Don't you remember anything?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And a few others that we're going to talk about. But we have more stuff coming up in this episode. We have Space Junk. We also have Science and Locomotives, of which reminds me of a bad pun, coming up. He's hacking.
During the school day, I would spend like 8 hours still on that once I got home.
So that's what happened.
That stunted my growth.
Run it by me again. I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, I mean, nothing really could shine a light to that.
That sounds more like an antiperspirant to me. What's it about? What text editors do you use?
Wait a minute.
Is that enough time to take a drink of water? If so, post facto?
It's my birthday, so I might as well give something away to balance out the presents I will get.
He had a voice upgrade.
That was before the upgrade.
Have you used that?
I have not, no.
This is how the professionals do it, folks.
Hi, this is Gil Gerard, and you're listening to Technorama.
Hey, by the way, as Tim Elliott pointed out, we should do a shout out to Mike at Mike Tech Show.
Oh, yeah.
500 episodes this week.
Outstanding.
Yesterday, as a matter of fact. So how about that?
Dun, dun, dun. Right behind you all the way, Mike. We used to be friends in tech.
Now we're enemies.
Frenemies. Frenemies in tech. So the third bullet item on our coming up in this episode thing reminded me of, did you hear about the crazy Mexican who stole trains? They said he had locomotives. Where is it? All right, here. We just have to do this intro.
Oh. Wait a minute. Let me see if I can wash that away.
You have alcohol? I do not. That's why we do this show.
That's why. No, you're the jokes is why.
We have no feedback despite this being a double whammy holiday of 400 shows and someone's birthday, of which we will announce later. We're being so subtle about this. So we're going to go right for that history stuff.
Hey,
On this day in history, for March 26th, it is the 85th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar, and there are just 280 days remaining in 2014. It was on this date in 1636 that the Utrecht University, that's harder to say than it is to read, is founded in the Netherlands.
The Book of Mormon is published in Palmyra, New York, on this same day in 1830.
March 26, 1931, Swiss Air is founded as the National Airline of Switzerland.
Switzerland? That's weird. And today in 1934, the driving test is introduced in the United Kingdom.
Swiss Miss is the chocolate of... Never mind. Today in... Where was I? Oh, the United States Army launches Explorer 3 on this date in 1958. That would have been impressive.
And this does not forget, 17 years ago, 39 bodies were found in the Heaven's Gate cult suicides.
They're right behind that comet. All the way, Hail Bop. 1999, the Melissa worm infects Microsoft Word processing and email systems around the world. Today in 1999, which I already said but forgot to edit out.
Yeah, I remember that. And that very same day, although not entirely related, the jury in Michigan finds Dr. Jack Kevorkian guilty of second-degree murder for administering a lethal injection to a terminally ill man.
Happy birthday goes out on this day to Prokop Davis, the Czech scientist, whom I did not pronounce correctly, but close enough. He also invented the lightning rod. He was born on this date in 1698.
Also born in this date in 1773, American mathematician and navigator Nathaniel Bogdich.
Happy birthday to German mathematician Adolf Hurwitz, born today in 1859.
And in 1874, Robert Frost, American poet and playwright.
I forgot to edit some of these, so use your imagination and be creative with the linguas here. Max Abram, the German physicist, was born today in 1875.
And Othmar Amon, Swiss-American engineer, designed the George Washington Bridge and the Zarno Narrows Bridge, was born in 1879.
Verrazano Narrows.
Yes.
William Westmoreland, the American general made famous in Vietnam, was born on this date in 1914. Take us out.
If it's your birthday, and if it's your birthday, like Chuck's. I knew that was coming up. We celebrate with the likes of 83-year-old actor, director, and singer Leonard Nimoy.
Singer? Really? Singer?
Yeah, really.
74-year-old actor James Caan.
And 66-year-old rocker.
66! Yeah.
Steven Tyler.
Actor, screenwriter, and producer Martin Short.
And Jennifer Grey.
And co-founder of Google, Larry Page, who's only 41. And that's the way it was on this day in history, whether you like it or not, for March 26, 2014.
It's history. Eat it.
Just a footnote. There was an event in there from 1967 that said 10,000 people gather for one of many Central Park bee-ins in New York City. Remember, like in the 60s, they had love-ins and sit-ins and... I think we need
just be in.
we need a modern version of that, and I want to call it a login.
We all experience that every day.
We all join the internet and sing Kumbaya.
Yeah, a login.
A login.
Actually, you know what? You could probably use that somewhere, some kind of internet tax protest or something. We're having a login.
We're just calling it a hangout on Google now.
Let's protest the NSA, man. Let's have a login.
You don't have
Wait, they already have the login.
Protest the anything. You just have to be there. Free love, man. It's on the internet. And here's my random thought also as I was putting together the show notes tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't some of these computer protocols make great band names? Just call your band SMTP and make people wonder what it's about, and only the nerds will laugh. Or LDAP. Doesn't that just sound like a cool band name? SSO.
I was trying to think of, what was LDAP?
that sounds Mexican.
Oh, wait. You could go old school and go with some modem protocols like Kermit.
V.24bis.
X modem.
X modem. I think Z modem sounds cooler than X modem. But anyway,
do we have a news bumper thing here?
Bad news, fancy men.
This isn't bad news. Let's do that again.
Fancy men.
Hang on, Craig, you're going to have to edit that part because it was still only in one channel.
That's better.
Bad news, fancy men.
I expect a horse or something at the end of that.
It's not bad news. It's well, it is bad news from the state of the space junk that's up there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a terrible situation, actually.
Douglas Alexander from Australia. Almost got the country and the name wrong. Douglas from Alexandria.
Nobody's going to care anyway.
Sent us a link about the Australian Research Center that is trying to remove space junk. And there is a lot of it up there, and we're only tracking about 10% of it. Now, many of you have already seen the movie Gravity, which a army of space junk comes and destroys the space station.
Spoiler. Thank you. I haven't seen it.
What?
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't even seen like the those videos that say Gravity in 60 seconds because you can sum up
like
the whole movie on
come out. Yeah, I saw like a bolt fly out and mess up her, you know, whatever, and untether her. I don't know. No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, man. Okay, well, spoiler alert. It's only been like 2 months.
Thanks.
It's going to be on DVD before you see it. And in that case, you deserve a spoiler.
I deserve one?
If you wait that long, if you wait till it's on DVD or Netflix, too bad. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't wait forever. So anyway, there were a couple of videos in here that are really informative.
Do what?
A new $150 million Australian dollars research center is being set up to target space junk in Earth's orbit. The Cooperative Research Center, or CRC, there's another good band name.
Yeah, seriously.
For space environment management, based at Mount Stromio Observatory near Canberra. Mount Stromio sounds like it should be in Italy. Will bring together work by researchers.
How much did you say this thing was? How much is
$150 million.
Yeah, that's Australian dollars. Is that like equate to like pesos to American dollars?
Pretty much.
Oh, that would be a good deal.
The center will develop ways to track and remove more than 300,000 pieces of space debris in orbit. Yes, I said that on purpose. CRC Chief Executive Dr. Ben Green says, debris is a real problem for satellites and spacecraft. Quote, a catastrophic avalanche of collisions that would quickly destroy all satellites is now possible, he said. Because you think about it. It's kind of like that experiment where they show how nuclear reactions work, where they drop a ping pong ball into the mousetrap with ping pong balls on them, and they just keep cascading. Yeah, that's what
thinking,
it's like.
I was thinking more of the Genesis Project, the video.
Which oddly resembles the universal video thing where the light is coming over the planet. And oddly enough, Paramount did that picture. Strange. I'd go after Universal for stealing the Genesis effect for their opener.
Yeah.
Quote, in the worst case, two satellites would collide and the debris from those satellites would be directly in the path of more satellites in a very short space of time.
Yeah. We took Harrison to go to as an Omnimax theater in Charlotte and they did a video or they played a movie. It was talking about the real threat of the space junk and how it could actually threaten our ability to even leave orbit, you know, because you have all these things. One, you're tracking them. What if something gets off? And like you said, one bolt flying at, a million miles an hour hits one satellite and explodes and it just cascades just like you talked about.
Yep. National Geographic had a show a couple weeks ago called Live from Space. And they had the two astronauts that are up there on the space station. And they had a special, and they had segments in between. And one of the segments was about how they track and alert the space station and move it out of the way when something comes into this predefined box. It's something like, 200 miles by 10 miles by 10 miles around the it sounds like a big box, but it's not when things are moving at thousands of miles.
Well, if you look at how many satellites are actually there, I'm surprised they can have a box that big.
Yep.
Well, they're in a different, you know, there's different levels of orbit. So the space station's at 250 miles.
You're right. Yeah, you're right, of course, about that. But it's just kind of amazing. And, you know, some of the theories that they had on how to get rid of those, aside from what they're talking about, was hitting them with lasers to heat them up so they would drop out of orbit and burn up.
It's like a reverse Death Star.
Yeah. One of them was almost like a space dump truck, where it had like almost like a netting kind of thing. It would kind of scoop them up.
How would you prevent the stuff from going through the net, though? That those things can punch holes in the space shuttle.
Well, if you match the speed of them, you can kind of and slow it down and push it, or you know. So there's different ways. They were talking about pushing them somehow. I was trying to dream up something with magnets one time, but so I don't
their,
know.
So their net is catching up to this piece of, you know, a bolt, right? It's catching up to this bolt ever slower, ever slower. Meanwhile, there's 1,500 bolts coming the other direction.
Hey, I didn't say it was flawed.
That,
flawed.
That didn't work. What else we got?
Yeah. So I think the laser, if it would work, it would be promising. Now, we're talking about getting the bigger stuff, not necessarily all the little bolts. But still, you know, imagine trying to track all that little tiny crap.
Yeah. Oh, they do in some cases. Didn't the Chinese blow up a satellite a few years ago or purposely collide a couple of them? And now there's just Chinese space junk out there making a big mess.
I seem to remember that. I think it was so they would actually come down and burn up.
Yeah. How'd that work out for you?
I don't know. I'm just, every time I see one of those diagrams that shows the Earth and all the little satellites.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. Just like we see in this article here, that's a video, but you can see the Earth and it's encompassed by all this crap.
It's like Technorama. It's amazing. It works at all.
Yeah. And that truth. Yeah. We may burn up in the atmosphere.
And lo and behold, there's just a couple of Yahoos running all these satellites like us.
Yeah. Shoot us with a laser.
Turning to the birthday calendar, we have two. Mm. Yes, two. And one of them doesn't count. That'd be me.
It does count.
All right. It's my birthday because this goes out on March 26th. So show 400. Thank you very much. What a great present. Thank you, Craig. Did not time that because business travel has been intervening for a bit.
Yeah, we postponed it a couple weeks just to line things up.
Yeah, kind of like those satellites.
Hey, by the way, it's Steve Rickyberg's birthday the day we're recording this.
The 23rd, yes, it is.
Because we've been recording.
So how old is he now? 26?
18?
18, oh. Yeah, I think so.
Actually, he's probably like 42. He's got a family of 8.
Caught up. How did he do that? He's been time traveling again.
Yes. No.
And March 26th is also Brina Baird in Hampton, Virginia. Happy birthday to you. And if it's your birthday this week and we didn't shout out your name, happy birthday to you. We wish you all the best and hope that someday you go over to the wiki at chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name on the calendar because, you know, we'd love to see you over there.
We don't share this information with the NSA, by the way.
No, we don't. Well, it's on the internet and it is open without a login.
It's safe.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
Let us take a quick break. Lettuce from the salad bar.
And catch up with ourselves.
I'm being peppered with puns. We'll be right back with more stuff.
I'm scared to say anything on the show anymore. You're going to stick it in one of those sweepers.
I say things on purpose to be in the sweepers.
It works perfectly. It was easy enough. Bam. Connected. And you don't need a PC to do that. I did it all with the remote control.
I'm certain about that.
What is this? Well, I'm game. I'll try it. I tried to do large. I did the small and the medium ones. No problem. Smooth as silk.
Hi, this is John Bell from Bells in the Battery, along with...
Hi, I'm Miss Schmackelheimer, Miss Sadie Schmackelheimer.
And you're listening to Technorama.
I'm not saying that.
You gotta say it, it's their slogan.
I don't care.
You've got to say it, that's the whole idea behind doing this.
I'm not saying that, it's stupid.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Get your geek on.
That wasn't so hard, was it? 101.
Turning to the chat room.
We have a live chat room that's going on every Sunday night.
Bring to the chat room.
It's on this side of my screen. Right over there. I don't know about you.
Whatever. It's over there somewhere.
It is. It's right next to your face right there.
Hey, remember, did you ever see that movie Idiocracy?
Sounds familiar. I may have seen it, but the name is not ringing a bell.
You know, the one where the guy was frozen and he was the smartest person in the world when he woke up.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And everybody else had gotten dumb.
Yeah. But I love that little scene there. Show Fox News and the girl says, and now we go to Formica out in the in the field. And she turns this way and the graphic pops up.
In the chat room, we have, of course, you and me. We have Claudio M., Captain Rootbeer, Gru. Happy birthday, Gru, you. We have Mad Marv and Tim Elliott. We have the regulars on board. And we'll see what happens next week when we get to show 4. Oh, hey, we're coming up with show 404. Should we just, like, not post that one?
We may have to skip that one. We'll just go to 405.
This show is not fine. And isn't a 403 forbidden?
Yes, it is.
It's getting scary.
Wait a minute. I wonder, what is 401? HTML error 401.
200 is success. What's 500? What did Mike just
actually
received?
This one does make sense. Unauthorized explain. 401, unauthorized. There you go.
500 is 500 is like illegal request or something.
Actually, we should start naming our show titles by the error.
By the HTTP response code.
Yeah.
We'll make up new ones as we go. No, we're going to define new response codes. What's a 400 now? It's no snappy intro. What was it?
No snappy title.
No snappy title. People look at their browser and it just comes up as no snappy title. Where the heck did that come from?
Here we go. Actually, we could. Yeah, bad request was 400. So
bad request.
Yeah, we missed that one.
Isn't that a Lady Gaga song? Wait, that's Bad Romance.
That's right.
Bad request.
Bad request.
Let's look at this.
Black and white.
I need a jitter in my screen.
Yeah.
Looking at the Remember When, we have...
Like we did that video with the sun at the Computer History Museum.
The purple furniture, whatever it was.
The purple sun furniture, that was fun.
And then we black and white it so you couldn't see it was purple.
I even jiggered your voice a little bit.
This 1960s jet train is still America's fastest locomotive. In the mid-1960s, New York Central Railroad engineer Don Wetzel was exploring ways to make trains run safer. Cheaper.
I was like, it doesn't exude that, does it?
No, it doesn't. Well, especially the front end of this thing reminds me of Iron Man's mask. So, there's that.
It was like an early Iron Man uniform.
Iron
type.
Man's bullet train. Safer, cheaper, but most importantly, faster! And clearly, the most logical means of accomplishing all three of these objectives was to strap a pair of Air Force surplus jet engines to the roof of a prototype high-speed locomotive, creating the world's fastest self-propelled train. Wait, what? Built in 1966 by the New York Central Railroad Corporation, the M497 Black Beetle experimental jet-powered locomotive was the first, but surprisingly not the last, of its kind. The Black Beetle utilized an existing Bud Rail diesel car, also known as an RDC-3, which would be another good band name, with an added streamlined front cowling covering the RDC's conventional blunt nose and a pair of secondhand General Electric J4719 jet engines, which had previously been employed as boosters for the Convair B-36 Intercontinental Bomber.
Hey, it looks like it's got a cockpit on top.
The engines look more like they came from, what were those first jets that the Germans came out with? the Messerschmitt. Mm-hmm. 262.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They look like mm-hmm. an old Messerschmitt engine.
It doesn't look like a cockpit on top, like somebody just sit in it. And...
Or the pods that go under a B-52. They kind of resemble that as well. It does kind of look like a cockpit.
I do like the slope design of the front, though. I mean, it looks like a mean train, to be honest with you.
That's why it looks like Iron Man.
Or no, not Iron Man, but it looks like something Red Skull had in the last Captain America movie.
There you go. Just put a little jet pod on top of his head.
Yeah, check that one out.
That is, wait, I'm getting to that.
Okay.
What's more, what's explained, these engines could be easily adapted to burn diesel as opposed to jet fuel, making them ideal for both the Black Beetle and Wetzel's previously patented railroad snowblower. That's a snowblower.
Just what you need, right?
I could have used one of those this year. But I opted for that. I opted for that flammable stuff that we talked about a few weeks ago.
Where you did just, it work?
Let's just say my pants are a little shorter this summer.
Your grass won't be the same when it finally comes around.
There is a video, if you follow the show links. It's not narrated and there's no music or anything. It looks like it's recorded off of an old VHS, but it does play and there's some interesting stuff along the way. There's also many, many, many minutes of boring. As there you go.
Look at this. Look at my webcam.
I like the animated GIF on the webcam.
There you go.
It's a Lego version of the train.
Hey, I'm ready for the abominable snowman to drop on top of it.
Right. I was expecting Burl Ives to jump out.
Hey, look, there's Hermie. He's driving.
Have a holly jolly engine. Please
look,
don't.
Santa, we got some new tech for you to go.
It's my birthday. I can sing Christmas songs if I want.
Yeah. That's funny.
To the media corner.
To the media corner.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
No idea.
Media Corner.
So I was thinking it'd be funny to have that dude join Clinton's characters. Not Danny Hillcrest. Who's the Dan? I can't remember now. I just said anyway. You know,
my mind's blank because you made it blank
from the totally no basically podcasting show. Lenny Treetop. Yeah, that's it. Lenny Treetop and his neighbor Cindy and that guy whose character name is Beaker should all get together and have a really, really fast podcast. Imagine them trying to fit something in on that little app that we used to have that would produce 3-minute podcasts. You get like, hi, the end.
Well, time's up.
So in the media corner, we now have a new generation of Cosmos show hosted by none other than Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
So let's hear your thoughts on those first, and we can encourage our listeners, that's plural, because we're up to two, to get us some feedback on that.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. The first episode was much like the first one of Carl Sagan's back in the day. And because the next day, I actually went and found it on YouTube and watched it, and I was like, okay, it's very similar. And I think, me and you talked about it earlier, was the Carl Sagan one. It does not quite hold up a little bit. It's, you know, he's Carl sitting there looking off into the distance as he's narrating himself, you know.
He looks like he licked a couple of mushrooms before the show, too, because he's just got this grin on his face like, it's a beautiful billion. You know who he sounds like? He sounds a lot like Hugo Weaving. Welcome
to
the cosmos, Mr. Anderson.
I should get him to play him.
I was thinking the same thing. He could, Hugo Weaving could do a Carl Sagan redux.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. Harrison said he enjoyed it. He was looking forward to the next one. And we've seen both of them and we liked it. Harrison liked the, not trilobite. What are those little red, what was the name of that thing?
The horseshoe crabs.
No, they're krill? Little creatures that can pretty much exist anywhere. Even if you shot them into space, they could survive the vacuum of space. Huh?
Extremophiles?
That's the general find term out for because, things I
Cosmos Red.
All right, you keep looking that up. Anyway, I thought it was kind of cool. I have only seen the first episode. The others are on the DVR just because of business travel and whatnot. But I did enjoy the fact from that first one that he had met Carl Sagan in real life, and that's really kind of a spark that lit the fire for him. He even had a book signed by him. And when Neil couldn't make his bus or his train or something to go home, Carl invited him over. You know, say, hey, spend the night at my place. You know, what just a warm-hearted guy.
No kidding. Yeah, that was something I had not ever heard before, and I don't know if he was just kind of holding on to himself, but until the show. But I heard an interview where he was sharing that same story. It was also on YouTube, and it was a little more in depth, and it was like it's really cool. And he thought that he felt that this is the part that he went into that you didn't do on the show, but he thought, well, if this is the kind of encouragement that I got, then I have, you know, he feels like he has a responsibility to do that for others. And that's why, that's where a lot of this outreaching on social media, you know, he's talking a lot or does a lot of talks, I should say, not just talking a lot, but and doing Cosmos, things like that. That's where his motivation comes from. I thought it was pretty kind of neat.
I'm looking forward to seeing more of them. They sound good. Now, on a slightly unrelated note, you also saw Mr. Peabody and Sherman this past weekend?
Yes, there's science in there. So say science and the Peabody and Sherman.
Gotcha.
Yes, I did. And are you a fan? I'm sure you're a fan of the old cartoon, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah. So
I remember the originals.
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, it's a little bit different because there wasn't much to the cartoons other than, a 10-minute cartoon. But yeah, it was really good. Lots of laughs. You know how, you know, you ever watch Modern Family?
No.
Okay. Ty Burrell, who plays, you've probably seen his face a million times because they show him on Hulu. He's, anyway. So Ty is doing the voice of Mr. Peabody. And you know how on the cartoon, at the end of each one, he would do like the little pun, you know,
yes,
to sum up the whole adventure they had.
Yep.
And so this guy, he really could nail those puns and sell them. Like the one, they were talking to Marie Antoinette, and they went to visit her. And, of course, she said, let them make cake. And so at the end, he was telling Sherman as they were walking off, well, you know, if she had just used her resources and gave everybody bread, it would have been a whole different thing. And she could have had her cake and edict. Too.
Oh, boy.
I was like, but it was full of, you know, every time they did something, there was always a pun in there.
Yeah.
You did a good job with it. It was a great little cartoon. If you get a chance to go see it, and, you know, especially if you're a fan of the Mr. Peabody, we actually passed up on the Muppets this week to watch that. So,
wow.
Muppets are next.
There's a lot of good movies out right now, and it's not even the holidays or summer or anything.
I know. Well, I am looking forward to the Muppets because I am a Muppets fan. Who isn't, right?
I saw the trailer. It looked pretty good. It looked interesting. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the guy that's doing like the French thing, that's Ty Burrell.
The French thing.
Got the little mustache in there. Watch the trailer again. You'll see him.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. He's also in that movie. So.
Speaking of movies, it's been what, over 35 years or so since the, Ralph Bagdasarian did the animated version of Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
And his son, is that what it said? His son found some footage on the cutting room floor, like quite literally, things that didn't make it in, a fight scene between Gandalf and the Balrog.
Yeah.
Or, I'm sorry, not Bagdasarian, Eddie Bakshi. Sorry. I was thinking a different movie.
Yeah, well, Eddie is his son, though.
Yeah. No, I was thinking a whole different animation producer. I got it screwed up. So let me read instead of trying to remember. It works much better that way. More than 35 years after the film's original release, two clips of the lost footage that were cut from Ralph Bakshi's animated Lord of the Rings have been restored, quote, from the cutting room floor, unquote, thanks to the work of Bakshi's son, Eddie. Over on Boing Boing, Ethan Gilsdorf, I bet he got picked on for that name,
was served.
He sounds like
up...
a hobbit himself, doesn't he?
I am Ethan of Gilsdorf, son of Gilsdorf. Right. I always thought that about Bob Gandalf too, but he has served up a wonderful little retrospective on the film and its mixed reception and the creative decisions that led to these two scenes being cut. Now they're only about 10 and 13 seconds in length, but they are rather interesting as Craig plays the animated GIF.
There you go.
The particular rings footage that has been restored comes from the Gandalf versus Balrog fight sequence, and it's brief. One clip is a three-shot, 12-second sequence of the two characters falling into the void titled Gandalf Recalls Fighting the Balrog. The other is a 10-second shot described as Gandalf duels with the Balrog and smashes into the endless staircase. I don't remember the Balrog flying, but okay.
Well, in the movie, he didn't really. I don't know. I'm not sure if he did in the book, because they were talking about in the story, you know, Gandalf's talking about how he fell to the lowest depths of the earth and then went to the highest peaks fighting the Balrog.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know that he flew, but he may have.
They just wrestled and rolled around a lot.
Actually, you know what? Out of the Lord of Rings movie, that was one of my favorite little side stories, watching Gandalf fighting with that thing, going down, falling down. It was just, I thought that was amazing.
And then they were out fighting on the mountain somehow.
Yeah, then they're all, they went to China, came out on a mountain.
But, you know, that coincides with what you said. That's just Peter Jackson's interpretation of, you know, the lowest depths to the highest peaks.
Yeah.
So we just don't know how he got there.
But by the way,
we do know how. Go ahead.
By the way, scroll down to the, I can't, there's the chat room. Hold on. I was trying to share this screen right here. Start right, screen share. Room. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
Dirk the Daring jumped in.
You know what's funny is I was scrolling through the comments. I recognized that instantly, even though I wasn't a big player of that game.
Yeah.
That was pretty
How
cool.
How could you not? I mean, that was a great game.
That was very innovative for its time. Laser
dance. I was fascinated by Dragon Slayer. Yes. Yeah. I was very fascinated by it. I kept watching it and watching. You know, and ultimately, it was just a cartoon, but different drawn scenes and the programming of the laser disc. It just, that amazed me.
So much.
By the way, in the article here about the Lord of the Rings, you can go look at some of the concept art for it, which looks really, really cool.
Far out.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, this is not to be confused with the Rankin Bass version, right?
Yeah, that's what I was, the animation was similar, and that's what I was thinking of. And Bagdasarian did the chipmunks, I think. So that's where I was getting a little confused.
Oh, right.
Anyway, we may not know how Gandalf got from the lowest depths to the highest peaks, but we do know how Bill Nye became the science guy.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of footage in here I've actually seen before. Did you watch the video?
I did.
Did you ever watch Almost Live on Comedy Central back in the day? This is like 20 plus years ago.
I don't think I saw Almost Live.
I can't believe it's been that long. But you watch him when he's doing those old videos, how much younger he looks. That's not that long ago.
He almost didn't look like the same. Like, barely.
So Bill Nye, if you haven't found out, went to school to be a mechanical engineer. And one of his friends breaks in at one point and he goes, "Hey, look at this. This is Steve Martin. Steve Martin's funny and he's doing the same thing you do." Well, not quite, you know, mechanical engineering, I don't know, but that kind of got him a lead on a local show in the Northwest. I think it was a Seattle area called Almost Live. It was a sketch comedy show. And Comedy Central got a hold of that show. It was on a local public access channel for a while. And that's where I first caught up with Bill Nye and knew him as Bill Nye, the science guy, which was just recently coined before he started that show. He also did some other sketches like Speed Walker, which is disturbing in its own way, but... It was kind of like the early version of In Living Color, only this was sort of a Seattle-based version, and they had some local comedy, but Comedy Central edited a lot of that stuff out, like cops in Wallingford. Well, if you don't live near Wallingford, it's probably not that funny. But
yeah, ain't that the truth? Yeah.
But you got the sense of what Wallingford was like, you know, very upscale, and somebody's arrested for throwing a can of soda, you know.
Yeah, well, we got a feeling of what Reno was like after watching Reno 911.
Yeah. Or right? Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, Dog the Bounty Hunter.
You know, reality TV isn't reality, but comedy TV is.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
So here's another cross of nice job putting together these stories tonight, by the way, Craig.
Oh, yeah.
It says, I never knew that Bill Nye started out as a comedy performer, although the way he tells the story and given the way he taught science in his TV show, it all makes sense. Science plus comedy, what a powerful mix. And in a little saga guidance from none other than Carl Sagan, whose fingerprint still touches layman science education today, and you've got a winning combination. So he mentions his touch point with Carl Sagan as well. So that was kind of cool.
Hey, well, you know what's funny is he described his start in science similar to the way Steve Martin got his start as a comedian. Did you know? I have to go read this to make sure I'm right on this, but from what I understand, Steve Martin was, of course, trying to be a musician.
Oh, and yeah. He's got the banjo. Yep. Everybody's.
Well, wait a minute. So he went to go do a show and it screwed up on the bulletin or the program and said magician. Magician. They mixed it up. So he ended up doing a comedy magician bit. And then it just kind of went from there.
Well, he also came out with that song King Tut.
Yes.
Which some of my friends did a version of that for the talent show in eighth grade. That was very entertaining, shall we say, because all these guys had on was basically a towel and a headpiece and sunglasses. And that picture recently showed up on Facebook. So kids, even if you think mom and dad didn't have Facebook back then, there are still embarrassing pictures showing up. Don't help the cause.
That's funny.
And we have one final animated GIF of the day. Craig, would you like to show that on the webcam?
Yeah, I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to start doing an animated GIF of the day or whatever of the show.
Or in our case, of the month.
Yeah. So here you go. Let me share the screen.
Cutting a water droplet using a super hydrophobic califragilistic expialidocious knife on a super hydrophobic surface. So
you go. Get it started there.
You see, it's like, it doesn't even, it looks more like jello.
Looks like mercury.
Now it looks like they're holding the water between two electrodes, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think it's just two surfaces. It looks like a hook. Looks like two little hooks. Yeah,
like loops or something.
Actually, you know what it looks like? One looks like a hook. The other one, the one on the right, looks like a twisted loop off of a fishing lure or something.
They are being held in alligator clips, though. That's very obvious.
You know what else? Yeah. I see the alligator. You're right.
What's a super hydrophobic knife look like?
You're looking at it.
Well, all I can see is a black line bisecting this tube of water. But it's cool anyway.
Did you ever mess with mercury back in the day?
Yes. As scary as that thought is.
Yes. I remember at home our a thermometer broke. And so mom had the mercury on the counter. She was, of course, told us not to touch it with your hands, but we used some stuff and pushed it around. It was so weird because it kind of keeps to itself. It acts like water, but it's not water. You know, it has the properties, but yeah, it's kind of neat. So,
yeah, I think we did that in grade school too. It was the same kind of thing. Don't touch it with your hands. So you're letting us play with this super toxic chemical that'll kill us.
Okay. Use your tongue.
Don't use your hands. How about my eyelid?
Use a straw.
It's like a
no. We get plenty of mercury from the fish. Don't do that.
I thought you said we get Freddie Mercury from the fish. What?
Yeah.
And if you ask the Q if he's messed around with Mercury, he'll say, yes, I've changed its orbit twice, but nobody noticed. And that brings us to the end of the show, where we wish you would leave us some feedback on the listener line, 206-222-2428. We haven't heard from you since show 300 or worse. We'd love
to. Since 399. Yes, you know what? I'm calling everybody out. I want some feedback.
In the next 100 shows, which gives you about 5 years.
Here, there's some lead time.
It took
for
us
you.
3 years to get this far, from 300 to 400. What are you talking about? I'm not exaggerating.
I think we've done a few more shows than that. Consider our interviews too.
Okay, there's a handful of those in there.
Yeah, yeah.
I have the thing. I just took it down off the wall. March 11th, 2011. March something, 2011. It's taken us a while. Life has changed, but we're still here. We want to hear from you. Send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. You can find out at the Technorama page, chuckchat.com/technorama. I should make a jingle out of that. Let's jingle this and get out of here. Find us on Google Plus and all those. That's the beginning.
Yeah.
the pilot, you get.
Hey, there by the way, in our FTP site, now there's a few videos in there. But I've got 653.
Does that include all the ID tags and everything? Probably not.
ID3 tags?
Well, like, hi, this is Adam Savage.
No, it does not.
Oh, okay. Well, good. See, we almost made it through an entire show without a screw up.
Yeah.
Until I hit the wrong button at the end and played the wrong music. But life goes on. We want to thank Matt Marr for giving his great blog content during the week. We also want to share a thanks with those who showed up in the chat room and joined us on the Hangout. And thank you for downloading and listening. Don't forget to tell a friend about Technorama and make them wonder why. Till then, give me a binary high five.
101. Why, oh, why?
When 900 years old you reach, look as good you are not, hmm?